fortunate enough to have a seat belt, please fasten it. Our next speaker is one of the very few that surfaces in every profession. Jim was only in his mid-30s when he and his players brought the National Collegiate Athletic Association's National Championship Trophy to North Carolina State. They did it by upsetting a great Houston University ball club. But Jim's influence soars above and beyond the basketball court. There's even a bumper sticker in North Carolina that calls for Valvano for governor. Coach Valvano commands attention in and out of the sporting world because he is much more.
The fourth place basketball team in the Atlantic Coast Conference, a team that lost 10 out of the 27 games it played during the regular season, won 9 out of 9 postseason games against the best basketball teams in the country to become the national champions. What can turn a team around like that? How can a team with more losses than any national champion in the history of the NCAA not be intimidated by the Houston Cougars? A team that had come from behind to defeat a great Louisville team 94-81 in the semifinals and that had been undefeated in their last 25 games. Maybe they just didn't know any better. Before the final championship game between Houston and North Carolina State, the Washington Post wrote, "Trees will tap dance, elephants will drive in the Indianapolis 500, and Orson Welles will skip breakfast, lunch, and dinner before North Carolina State finds a way to beat Houston." Lorenzo Charles grabbed that ball and stuffed it through the basket. Jim Valvano became the 28th coach in the history of college basketball to win a national championship.
Gentlemen, Coach Jim Valvano.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. I need as much applause as I can get after that last question. Give me up. Thank you very, very much. I'll tell you, what a morning I've had. I mean, you too. I have cried from the young lady from Mexico, and then I laughed with your own Mr. Donaldson, and then I thought. The rabbi made me think and made me feel guilty. And all kinds of things about that, you know. I'm gonna bring about a dissenting opinion, Rabbi, if you don't mind a second, you know. And then the last one, you know, President Ross. I mean, he scared the pants off me. Or, that's a bad choice of words, maybe. But holy cow! You know, now we're gonna talk about something. I love that film. I'll be honest with you. I like that picture up there, too, as a matter of fact. You know, they told me I had to stand behind that, and I can't do that. I just got to explain that. I'm an Italian kid from Queens, New York, all right? Hey, this section, watch your wallets, this section over here. Be very careful, right? But I have to move around a little bit, I have to. And I will try. They told me to keep this thing to 30 minutes, and, you know, it's hard to get my hands going. It takes me a while to get that cranked up. But what a fantastic group this is, I'll be honest with you. This is a privilege and an honor to speak here today. I mean, you folks are fantastic, I'll be honest with you. Absolutely fantastic. You know, it's not often I get to speak where the audience, to me, excites the speaker. And that's the case today. This is a great group of people. I want to explain that film, first of all. You know, a lot of times if people see that, they say, what a wonderful job the people who run the presentation to bring that film so that you can better acquaint yourselves with the speaker. I don't assume that everybody knows who I am and follows sports, but the fact of the matter is, I just want you to know, I brought the film. I want you to know, I brought the film. Okay? I love that film, you know? Oh, yeah. People say to me, and I apologize, Rabbi, about, you know, in 1983, won the national championship, and they said, do I think about it very much? You know, it's in the past. I shouldn't have. Well, the fact of the matter is, other than I have that film in 16-millimeter color sound, I've got it on VHS, beta, half-inch, three-quarter-inch, right? I've got, when I go to work, a little cassette I put in, and I listen to the last minute and a half of the game. And if you came to my home in North Carolina, if you ring my doorbell, the last 44 seconds of the game play, you know, and I love it, I love it. And in fact, let's run that sucker again, you get a chance back there. I love that. And that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about, the topic is cutting the nets down. All right, in my profession, cutting the nets down means you reach the top. I mean, one school, 290 schools, Division I start the year, and one school gets to cut the nets down. And that's what you saw, that we cut the nets down. But I have to explain a little bit. You know, I'm going to talk fast. I have so many things I want to tell this group. There's so many things I'd like to share with you. Because I think there's so much similarities between us. I was talking to some of the people about making the million-dollar roundtable and what it takes to get there. And yes, you know, the success and the competition that you have each year. You know, great salesman. That's what I did. After we won the national championship, the following year, the ball goes up again. And you have to do it again. You can't. If you want to make the NCAA tournament again, you must earn your way in it, just like you do every year. And I have a great feeling, I think, for what you do, and I'm also, I admire it so much. But that film, you see, there's one thing before I go on and say anything, I'd like to hopefully say something significant. Everybody still laughs, and I want to explain it. There's a point there where you see when I run around, and people laugh. And I know why you're laughing. People laugh because they think that I lost my mind at that moment, that I didn't expect to win, that it was a shock that we won the game. Now, not a whole lot of folks thought we could win. You know, the guy said there on, you know, the Washington Post said trees would tap dance and elephants and all that stuff. Well, it's true. Not a lot of people. Nobody out there. Nobody. Every once in a while someone says, nobody. My mother. You know, my mother, I am the son of Rocco and Angelina Valvano, I want to tell you. All right? Yes, you got that? And my mother, little Angelina, you got a little Italian lady, about 4'3", with the bun in the back, you know what I'm saying? The knitting needle goes through there, black mark over there, dresses in black all the time in case there's a death in my neighborhood. You know? And that's where I grew up, you know? Where I grew up, you know, she's a professional mourner, my mom, right? My mother, her second son, who she loves like no other. I mean, she took Houston and gave 8 points. Tell her, very disappointed. So nobody thought we could win that game. So I want to explain to you, because you'll understand it more than anything. A business group like yourself will understand what I was doing that night in Albuquerque, New Mexico, when I was sprinting around. I didn't lose my mind. I wasn't shocked we won. What I was doing there, right, very simply, right, I was marketing myself. You see? Oh, yeah. I know how important that is. Let me explain it to you. I grew up watching Wide World of Sports. You've all seen this. Spinning the globe. Spanning the sports world. Joy of victory, agony of defeat. They say that every week. What's the agony of defeat they show every week? Somebody tell me. Every week, the scare. Now, I was born in Queens, not a lot of slopes there, but I assume the fella is supposed to go like a bird in flight. Absolutely beautiful. What does he do each week, that guy? He takes one of the worst falls I've ever seen. But I checked these things out. That man is still alive. And every week of his life, no matter where he is, it's true. He's in a bar. They go, up, here you come, Pierre. Check it out again, you know? Oh, that bad. So embarrassing, that man. Everybody remembers that. But nobody remembers the joy of victory. Because they don't have a good one on Wide World of Sports. So I was going to give them a great joy of victory. You see? That's what I want you to do. Now, listen. Let me pick. You got a picture. I'm down in the locker room before the game. Biggest game of my life. I get any Italians out there? We got a paisano too around here. All right, one right here. You know what Ajuda means, don't you? Now, what's your name? Tell me your name. Federico. Hey. What do you fix the equipment where you work, Federico? No. I'm only kidding. I can say that, Federico. What's your first name? Frank? Of course it's Frank. We knew that. Give me two guesses. Tony, Frank. I got it. All right. What else could it be? I got a sister named Tony. What, are you kidding me? All right. So the fact of the matter is, I get agita before big games. You know that. It's a nervous stomach I get. You might wonder, what do the great coaches do? Heard the gentleman mention Dean Smith and all, and Bob Knight. You might think that the great coaches probably spend before a big game. Right? They probably spend going over strategy. Last second plays. Okay, this is what I do for a big game. Sagaraja. I spend most of the time in the men's room before a big game. And that game was so big, I was so nervous. So I came out. Oh, what a big game. And a fellow from the NCAA came to see me and said, Coach Valvano, he said, I'd like to wish you luck. Thank you. He said, thought you'd like to know, if you win tonight's game, you'll become only the 28th coach in the history of the game to win a national championship. I said, wow. I didn't realize that's all. Only 27 others. That's it. So, oh, he left. Zoom. I went right back into the job. I want you to know what I was thinking before the biggest night of my life. I came out again and said, what a moment I have. A fellow from CBS television came to see me. Said, Coach, good luck. Thank you. He said, thought you'd like to know. We expect tonight's game to be the most watched game in the history of televised basketball. I said, how many people are going? He said, we expect over 50 million people are going to tune in. In fact, that's how many? 50 million. How many people out there saw it? Let me see. Get it. Unbelievable. Hey, run the film again. I don't have time. I'm sorry. Right? The fact is, I said, 50 million. He said, yup. He left. Zoom. I went right back in. So I want you to know what I was thinking before the biggest basketball game of my life, right? I said, holy, I got a chance to become the 28th coach in the history of the game to win a championship, and I can do it in front of 50 million people. If we win, what should I do? The year before me, Dean Smith beat Georgetown in the national finals. I watched. I was there. I said, how did he handle it? Here's what he did. Buttoned his coat. And he walked over and shook hands with John Thompson. Well, with John Thompson, he shook hands. And then he went down to the locker room. And everybody said, what class that man has. What dignity. And I said, gee, I was dreaming. I wonder if I ever won. You think I'd... Nah, I couldn't do... No way. And there it was. So there I was speaking. What I would do was, if we won, was sprint out on the court. Why? Because the rabbi said, he talked about the chariots of fire before. And I remember those. I would sprint out on the court. You had Rocky Balboa. Figured I would run out, and the cameras would go where? Right to the coach. So here I come, just like that, running out. You know, and what did they do? Television? They'd capture that and put it in slow motion. You know that. And they'd put it in music, in the background. Probably a theme from Rocky. Or Chariots of Fire. And here I come running in slow motion. Huh? Not bad. Huh? Pretty smart. All right? And the kid, Derek Wittenberg, who took the shot as a kid who broke his ankle after the seventh game of the season. Doctors say he'd never play again. But he made it back miraculously with rehabilitation just for the tournament. The next game we lose is the last game of his career. Not only varsity, his career. So every game we won, he'd run over and he'd hug me. We won 9 games in a row, and he'd run over and he hugged me every single game.
like that, right? And we had one game, we beat Las Vegas on a last second shot. We missed it. We tapped it. We missed the tap. They had three Las Vegas players, had the rebound with once game's over. And they knocked it out of each other's hand. And my kid, Thurl Bailey, who plays Utah, falling to the ground caught it and threw it up at the buzzer and banked it in. He was on his kista, and he threw it up and it went in. Right? And the writer said to me, you know, would you explain that last play? I said, that's something we work on every single day in practice. Sometimes it's hard to get the opposition to fumble it like that, but, you know. And Derek Wittenberg would run over and he'd hug me. So for 9 games, that kid ran over and hugged me. So picture what I had in mind, what I thought. I figured I'd run out, here I'd come, running in slow motion. Right? Wittenberg would turn and see me. Right? 9 games he's hugged me. And he'd run to me in slow motion. You get the picture? Can you see the commercial coming? What a wonderful thing it was. That's what I had in my mind. You see, when with 44 seconds to play, in the game, you saw that, I called timeout, and I set up that last play, that lob pass that we threw to the... Hey, Federico, you believe I called that play? Yeah, what are you kidding me? You think that just happened? Lorenzo Charles, the kid who dunked it from Brooklyn, New York. Hey, you understand what I'm saying, and you folks from Brooklyn. He's from Brooklyn, New York, and right, I'm from Queens. There's two city kids. Right after I diagrammed the play, you know, I thought, what if it didn't work right? So I called Lorenzo over. I said, Lo, come here. He said, what's up, coach? I said, look, pay attention. It's very important. Anything, like if this play doesn't work, anything that's up near the basket, right, at the end of the game, make believe it's a hubcap. You understand that? That's a smart coach, you know? I'm not sure you can get that from Enterprise, Alabama, to be honest with you. But anyway, so, all right, so the shot, picture it happened. The shot goes up, it's to the right, I see it's going to be short, Lorenzo Charles grabs and he dunks it, and at that moment I knew two things. I was the 28th coach in the history of the game to win a championship, and there were 50 million people, so I took off to run my commercial, Wide World of Sports. And what you see there is an incredible thing that happens in marketing sometimes. I sprinted and got to the center court in Albuquerque, New Mexico, with 50 million people watching me, right, to hug Derek Wittenberg. And for the first time in 10 games, he's hugging someone else. I'm out there all by myself with 50 million people watching me. So embarrassing, you know, I'm telling you something. But anyway, that's what happened to me back in 1983. But that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about 1983, the year I got to cut the Nets down. And what I would like to say, right, because we are in, again, I'm going to be tunnel vision for a while, just tunnel vision about, yes, the world that we both travel in the business sense. In the business sense. My job, my goal, what I want to do each year is to win a national championship. I want to cut the Nets down. Right, there are 290 Division I schools that have that same goal. Right, there are only 3 coaches in the history of the game who have done it more than 2 times. Only 9 coaches who have done it twice. And 20, now it's 30 coaches in the history of the game who have done it once. So it's hard to do, but that's my goal. What I want to discuss is how I do my job in a very competitive field and see if in any way we have some similarities. See if there's a way when I've done it, maybe it helps you in your highly competitive world too. All right, because I'm starting again. Each year, season ends. Doesn't matter what I did last year. We won a conference championship last year. Doesn't matter. Right, we've been in the NCAAs 6 of the last 7. Doesn't matter. It starts over again. So how do I do my job? This is what I'd like to share with you of how I try and get it done. I think it's important when the season's over. I always remember, I love to remember from whence I came. There are 3 things I think about. Where I was, where I am, and where I'd like to be. Where I was, where I am, where I'd like to be. If where I am is exactly where I want to be, it's as far as I go. If I'm satisfied with where I am in my professional life as far as I go, well, I'm not. I want to win. I want to be the 10th coach to win 2 national championships. We've been in the final 8 3 times in the last 5 years, but I just can't, you know, but I'm getting close, But to do that, as I begin the journey again, I like to remember where I started. I think it's important. You're here to, you folks are the best. That's why you're here. But think for a second about the journey to get here. All of you, I'd like you to think about your first job. Your first job. How was it? How did you handle it? What was it like? For a moment, think. My first job was the freshman coach at Rutgers University in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And I wanted to be the best. It's amazing. I looked at your book. It says Dedication to Excellence. Dedicated to Excellence. I read a book by Vince Lombardi called Commitment to Excellence. Vince Lombardi was one of my idols. I wanted to be the greatest coach I ever lived. So I read this book. He had a movie out, too, and I watched the movie. And there's an emotional point in it with Vince Lombardi standing before his Green Bay Packer team for the very first time, wants to inspire, motivate, lead them. And he does it in that way, dramatic fashion. After he finishes the game plan, he turns and he challenges these guys. He says, gentlemen, we'll be successful this year. If you think of three things only. Your family, your religion, the Green Bay Packers. And he paused. And they got up, knocked the walls down. The rest was history. I said, oh, that's great. It's powerful, powerful. Your family, your religion, and Rutgers basketball. Your family, your religion, Rutgers. I'm 21 years old, right? I got these 17-year-old kids. My first time ever speaking before a group. And I finished my game plan. And I turned and challenged these kids, just like Lombardi. I said, gentlemen, we'll be successful this year. You think of three things and three things only. Your family, your religion, and the Green Bay Packers. I said that. And, you know, when you toss that out, you cannot get that back. Do you know what I'm saying? So I stood there just like Lombardi, and then your kids went, yeah, well, I don't know. We went out, lost by about 18 points or so, you know. We were tackling people, all kinds of stuff, you know. As I stand here before you today to talk about what it takes to cut the nets down, to reach the top in any business, I always like to remember from whence I came, what the journey was all about. What was it like? I remember the same guy who's there, way cutting the nets down, who told his team, the Green Bay Packers. I like to think about it. I worked at Rutgers a couple of years, got my next big break. Next big break, worked a few years, became head coach, the fellow out here, Johns Hopkins University, right? Hey, that's a big job, right? I was the tallest person in the whole program at Johns Hopkins University. I like to remember that, you know, where I came from. I worked there. I left the next big break I got. I worked about 7-8 years in my business to become a head coach at Division I. All right, there are 3 divisions. Division I was so proud. I applied for the job at Bucknell University in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. I'm not saying they had a bad basketball team. They hadn't had a winning season since the French and Indian War. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those jobs where they're telling you what a great job is. And I told the people like Quinn, you know, you won 1 game last year. You were 1-26. Why do you think this is such a good job? The fellow on the committee said, Coach, you're overlooking one thing. I said, what's that? He said, we've got everybody back from that team, you know? Wow. Am I lucky? The whole team we got back, huh? The guy without thumbs? Yeah, he's back. Yeah, we got all. Are we in good shape, huh? But, you know, there aren't that many jobs. There's only 290 of them. So I got it, and I took it, and I was excited. Oh, this is my... I've worked 8 years. 8 years, and now I'm on my road. I'm on the road. First game I ever coached in Division I of my business was against Syracuse University up in Syracuse. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're ranked in the top 10 that year. That year, they go to the Final Four, just like they did last year. And I got this team. The day before the game, the reporters said, how do you think you're going to do? I said, we're all right. We're all right. We're excited. We're ready. I'm ready. I've been training for this moment. I'm ready. The fella said, you know, you only won 1 game last year. I said, yeah, but we got everybody back. I want to tell you what you can accomplish. What you can accomplish in life. I took that team, right, that won 1 game before, played Syracuse. The team went to the Final Four, and at the half, I was only down by 8. Boy, was that exciting. That was the good bad news, is it was 8 touchdowns I was losing. At the half, I was losing in the first game I ever coached by 56 points. You know, you're walking down a locker room. It's not like chess where you resign. You know, you say, I've had enough. That's it. You know, you took my king, my pawn, my queens. That's it. I'm done. You know? It's not like boxing. They throw the towel in. No, no. Here's where they say, hey, come on, come on back up now. 15 minutes. Yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? You're walking down there, and the fans are yelling at you, there's more where that came from, Turkey.
Yeah, I know.
I lost the first game in my business that I prepared 8 years for. I lost by 72 points. Wait a second, that's not a bad second half. Think about that a little bit. I was getting smart even as we went along here, all right? Could you imagine if someone had said to me after that game, Coach V, 10 years from this day, you're going to win a national championship. I'd have said, in what sport? It's not going to be in this one, I'll tell you that. Oh, I started taking my picture for the resume and everything. I was done. Right? But that's what I like to remember. As I prepare again in this competitive, I like to remember where I came from. I like to remember the journey. Right, the biggest break I got was after that. I got the head coaching job in school. Some of you may have heard of, some may not. I own a college in New Rochelle. Oh, that's great. All right, but every job has its problems. Every product you're selling sometimes has a problem. Iona's problem was, you know, a little credibility. I'd go out and first kid I recruited, not from the New York area. I said, hi, Jim Valvano. I own a college. Kid said, hey, Ma, this kid owns his own school. Maybe he'll give us a dormitory or something. No. Yeah, unbelievable. Worked there 5 years. Then I got the job I presently hold, which was the biggest break of my life. I am the head basketball coach at North Carolina State, the Atlantic Coast Conference. I'm not saying we have the best basketball in the country, but no, we're going to be up in the top 2-3 every year. But I was a little worried about getting this job. I'll be honest with you. I am, as I told you, the son of Rocco and Angelina Valvano from Naples, Italy. And I'm going to get a job, an interview, down on Tobacco Road in North Carolina. I sat next to my man Fred here from Enterprise. We spoke to each other for 20 minutes. I have no idea what he said. He has no idea what I said. But he was laughing a lot at what he said, so it must have been funny. I'll tell you what. I mean, here I am. I want this job so badly, I go down for the interview. You'll understand this. I get off the plane, and they meet me at the airport. The fellow says, hi. He says, you know, Billy Ray Bob? And I said, where are the other two guys? You know? I don't know. Have any more people here. So I tried to fit in. I said, Jimmy, Tommy, Tony. I'm trying to adjust if I can, you know what I'm saying? So picture now, right? I go for the interviews and we find out we kind of like each other a little bit. And a month goes by and they offer me the job and I want it. I'm so excited. I'm going to coach the Atlantic Coast Conference and I'm ready. I get down there and they're a little worried and I'm a little worried. And they said, look, in order for you to really do the job here, we've got to get you out and speak to our booster club, our alumni, our fans. So I said, I'm ready. What do you want to do? They said, we have a Wolfpack Club. That's our support. Wolfpack Club. 11,000 members of the Wolf. Means I have 11,000 assistant coaches every game that I play. They said, you've got to go to the first Wolfpack meeting and knock them dead. Give an inspirational, motivational talk. Knock their socks off and they'll say, we hired ourselves a smart Italian from New York. See, I'm an Italian. You know that down there. I'm an Italian. So I said, that's all right. I'm ready. I said, I was dressed kind of like this. And they said, no, you can't go that way. And I said, why? They said, you got a lot to learn about living down south. So I said, you got to wear the school colors. You're going to go to a Wolfpack meeting. You got to wear a red jacket, which is, you know, that's where the Wolfpack are red. So I said, okay. And they gave me my first official 8 years ago, NC State red coat, made out of that material, kind of like steel wool.
You know, you get hit by a truck, you just brush the sucker off like that. So keep going.
I'm sure I should clean this thing, but I mean the way it follows me around. Let's go. Here we go. And it just comes. They get this big wide lapel, and it says NC State Basketball. And I said, I'm ready. I'm fired up. I'll do it. They said, not yet. You got so much to learn. And those of you who are supporters of a particular university understand what I'm saying. They said, we have school ties.
Please stop.
With the red coat, we have a Wolfpack tie. I said, oh, I'm ready. Let me have it. I thought it was going to be one of those ties with little tiny wolves on it where you had to get up real close and say, oh, gee, that's a Wolfpack tie. This tie's got three wolves on it. One, two, three. I'm talking about three angry wolves, you know, with a fierce growl and a hat. Each wolf has a hat on it that says NC State. You realize how big that's got to be to have a wolf with a hat on it, too? Each one. And it's the kind of tie, when you wear that tie, you do not have to wear a shirt, if you know what I mean. Have you seen people with ties like that? You know what I'm talking about? Or a wide thing like that. So I got this red steel wolf coat on. I got this red tie with a wolf and a half on it. You see, because it's made out of that material, no matter how you tie that knot, you pull it as tight as you want. Size of your fist around your throat. Like that. Makes your collar go up, kind of like that. You see some of those boosters? So I got this red coat on, this tie with a wolf and a half around my neck. And I said, I'm ready to roll. They said, not yet. You got so much to learn. Now I say this with love in my heart. All of you born and bred Southerners, I've lived there 8 years. I love it. My wife loves it. My family loves it. But there are differences in every part of the country. I said, I was ready to roll. And in no place in this United States of America, like the South, do you have more of an affection for checked pants. I'm telling you. I guarantee you, Fred's got about 26 pairs right now. And I know when he was home, he said, Helen, should I bring about 4 or 5 pairs to Chicago or what? You can't. So they said to me, Coach, you got to wear your red check pants. You know, and I try to tell them very rarely on a Sunday, did Rocco Valvano yell up to Angelina, hey, Ange, where's my red check pants? You know? So they were shocked I didn't have a pair, and they gave me my first official one-size-fits-all. NC State, pull them down, pick them up a little bit. Each with blocks in them, checks in them, and each check, it says NC State Basketball. Oh, yeah. So I said, oh, they said, you look good now. I said, all right, let me go. So I had to give my first speech. Now, listen to what I'm telling you. This is the most important speech of my life. Most important one of my life. Right, to 300 members of our booster club. And their way, whatever I said, is going to spread throughout the state of what kind of a guy I am, what kind of a speaker I am. Am I inspirational? So I'm on a plane flying down there to Greenville. A woman sitting next to me says, are you the coach at State? I said, yes, I am, man. I'm proud of it. Are you an NC State fan? She said, no. I said, oh, I got off the plane, went to get my luggage. Fellow behind the counter. He said, I saw your picture in the paper. You're the new coach at State. Yes, I am. They said, you an NC State fan? He said, no. I said, well, I'll make you one. He said, no, you won't. I said, we don't have a lot of fans here in Greenville. Now, picture this now. I'm dressed at the most important meeting of my life. I'm waiting 5:30. I'm not picked up. It's 5:45. Not picked up. 6 o'clock. 6:15, the phone rings. I pick it up. Paige, the head of the Wolfpack Club. He says, what are you doing there? I said, I'm in Greenville. Where are you? He said, yeah, yeah, Greenville, describe the airport to me. I said, right behind me. It says here, Greenville Spartanburg Airport. Now, that's right. Most of you react just like me. Until he told me, for the most important meeting of my life, I flew to the wrong state. Yes, sir. I flew to Greenville, South Carolina, dressed in a red steel wool coat. With a red wolf tie. Three 300 boosters waiting for their new leader, and I went to the wrong state. How'd you like to start the most important job of your life that way? Huh? He told me, he said, get your tail up here where you work. I said, I'm coming, boss, I'm coming. Now, you know what it's flight going through the airport like this and get back online? And that same guy behind the counter says, yeah, coach, what can I do for you? And I said, did you realize that there is a Greenville in both North and South Carolina? True story. He steps back. He says, hey, Bert, I told you. Starting a job and again, tough. I like to remember that before I start my journey. And I'm the same guy who told his team, Green Bay, back. I lost by 70s. I flew to the wrong state. I also cut the Mets down, the national championship. Become one of 28 coaches ever to do that. It's incredible the things that you can accomplish. All right, one last story. And then I want to talk seriously about something Rabbi talked about. It's very dear to my heart, too. All right. This is the last story, because I did have some fun things happen. This is my favorite thing happened. 1983, what a championship. I'm home one night, phone rings. Pick it up. And I said, yes, they said, this is Coach Val Vano? I said, yes, it is. They said, this is the White House call. White House? What would you do if you had a call from the White House? I hung up. Maybe you get a lot of calls from the White House. It was, this was my first, you know. I figured it was my cousin or somebody, you know, cousin Julio calling me or whatever. So I hung up. Phone rang again. They said, Coach, this is the White House calling. Do not hang up. I said, nah, we're cut off. I didn't hang. I wouldn't. And you know how it is when you win a championship. You see it in football and baseball, basketball. They said to me, the President of the United States requests your presence in the Oval Office tomorrow to present you with a plaque to commemorate your national championship. That's heavy stuff. A kid from Queens, New York, the son of Rocco and Angelina. I mean, I'm going to go to the White House. But you got to play the role first. And I said, one second, let me check my calendar, you know. You can't just call me at the last minute like this, you know. I was going grocery shopping tomorrow, you know. So I said, I could be there tomorrow about 3-ish. They said, you'd be here at 10-ish. I said, well, I'll juggle around a little bit. And so, now I call up home. You know what that's like? Call up your parents. Call my mom. Mom, Dad, I'm going to the White House. I said, Mom, I'm going to the White House. She said, what did you do? I said, no. I said, it's good. They're going to give me an award. She said, really? Oh, she said, well, one thing, she said, Jamal, so one thing, she said, please, do not embarrass the family. I said, hey, Mom, what are you saying? Keep your mouth shut, she said. I said, Mom, she said, you know, keep your mouth shut. Just smile and keep your mouth. I said, Mom, I'll be fine. Now, I went to the White House. What a great experience. I mean, I'm in the Oval Office. It's going to be on television. It's a wonderful story. All right, and we get there early, and it's one of those things where you rehearse it a little bit, and they tell me the president's going to walk in that door. We all get up. You respect. They had someone come in as a stand-in, and then someone with clipboards come around, right? And they came over and they said, what are you going to say to the president? And I said, what's he going to say to me? They said, don't get wise now. Here I said, so I said, wait a second. I'm not kidding. I thought that's the way it worked. He'd say something to me, I'd say something to him. If he's got nothing to say, I'll carry the whole conversation. All right. They're going to give me the hook, too. All right, so now, picture this. The president finally comes in. It was great. Everybody gets up, as you should. And I noticed some group dynamics. Terrific. There's the president of the United States, his little smile. Everybody in the room has a little smile. You know, when he went like that, we all went like that, you know? He went to sit down once. He faked. He went like that, and everybody went, whoa, like that. Oh. I said, what pressure I have on me. I can't, I'm not sure I can handle this pressure, you know? So now, he's a nice man. Whatever your political affiliation is, right? This is not a political statement. He's a nice man. He really is charismatic, he's warm, and he made me feel at home. Now, that's probably not good for me. I'll be honest with you. When I was on edge, look, now he made me feel at home. I started, you know, you want a piece of gum? Can I say that? I felt, you know? It was really bad. I only had one slice. I said, I couldn't have it. But I was feeling good. So now, we're right before it goes on television. They said, Mr. President, 1 minute to airtime. So he goes to sit down. He gives like one of those. And he looks back up at me and he says, Coach, I apologize. How do you pronounce your name for TV? Is it Valvano? Is it Valano? Is it Valvano? And I said, sir, it's Valvano, sir. And he said, Valvano? I said, yes, sir, Valvano. Very good. Now, not everything I said starts down here. I mean, up here. A lot of it starts here, comes up and gets to here and goes, boop, and it comes out. I have no control over it. Once it's here, it goes, boop, and it's out. Here's one of those occasions. Picture this. The Oval Office, the President of the United States, says, how do you pronounce that? I said, Valvano. I said, Vice, yes, sir, Valvano. And then I said it. I looked down at him and I said, is yours Regan or Reagan? I said that. As I said it, I said, oh, Ma, I'm sorry, Ma. And the whole room went, and it's an amazing thing what happens to your body. It's amazing. I started immediately to sweat. I mean, up here, over here, my pits, I'm standing in a pool of water, you know, in the Oval Office. And I said, please laugh, sir, please laugh. Please laugh. And Ronald Reagan went, ha, ha, ha. And everybody in the room went, ha, ha, ha. And I went, ha, ha, ha. That's a true story, true story. We had the interview. I got it on tape. And President Reagan's first question says, well, Coach Valvano, he says, that was a great victory. Are you going to do it again? I said, I'm not going to do it again. I won't do it again. He looked at me like I was crazy or something. But anyway, in 1983, I had a wonderful year. And I like to think each year as I try to get to the top again, I want to think about where my career began, where the journey began. Every speaker I've ever heard in a motivational sense always talks about, do this, 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 and you're there. That doesn't work that way. Not my business. Maybe it does in yours, but not mine. Hey, you think of where you started and the journey and what it took. I understand there's a gentleman here, Mr. Todd, 52 years in the $1 million round table. Am I correct? That's unbelievable. Congratulations. That's fantastic. Fantastic. And I'll bet you if I gave him the mic, he'd come up and tell some stories about where he failed, where he made a mistake. Now I want to talk to you about how I do my job. I have like 6 minutes left. How I do my job in a competitive field. How each day I try to beat the Notre Dames, North Carolinas, and everybody else. How am I going to do that? Right? I think everybody has to have a personal philosophy of how you live your life. Here's mine, very simply put. You plus motivation equals success. I have that only thing in my locker room. There's nothing else in my locker room but that sign. You plus motivation equals success. I have it on cards, bookmarkers. I have it on everything. It drives me. It's a passion. I was 16 years old. I heard the Reverend Bob Richards speak. Remember him, the Wheaties guy, the decathlon pole vault champion Olympics? And this is what he said, right? The gentleman said it before, but this is what, I was 16. Bob Richards looked over a group of these young kids at a basketball camp and said, the Lord must have loved ordinary people because he made so many of us. And there I am, 16, thinking I'm special, and here's a man I respect, said, the Lord must have loved ordinary people. He made so many of us ordinary. And I was a little, you know, you get a little down at 16 when someone's telling you that. And then he said the line that changed my life at 16 that I felt then. I'm 41 years old. I've been working 21 years in my business, and I feel it the same way today. He said, every single day, in every walk of life, ordinary people do extraordinary things. Ordinary people accomplish extraordinary things. And I raised my hand. I'm applying for the job right now. I'm an ordinary guy. I want to do extraordinary things in my life. And I believe it. I think that's strong. I think that's what it's all about. And I know this group has that same feeling. How do you do that? How do you go from the ordinary to the extraordinary? I think it's the second thing. It's motivation. And motivation to me is three things. Three things each day I try to do to get myself ready to roll. Some people will say to me, how do you motivate 18-year-old kids? How do you motivate yourself? I don't in 21 years motivate anybody except each day one person. I get up, James Thomas Anthony Valvano. And that's a full-time job keeping me up at the level I want. I hope that if I'm there, my assistants, my players, everyone will say, but that's a full-time job for me. I'm not a finger pointer. Say, hey, I'm working my... How about you? How come you... No, I work each day to get myself there. How? Motivation. Number one, enthusiasm. Ralph Waldo Emerson, speaking to graduating class at Harvard, said nothing great has ever been accomplished without enthusiasm. How enthusiastic are you every day in your profession? I interview people for jobs, and I'm very bad. I'm one of the worst coaches to come and say, what's the benefits here? I don't like that. I've never hired someone who's asking me. One fella last year said to me, do you have a dental plan? I said, yeah. If we don't win, the alumni kick our teeth in, you know? I said, that's our dental plan. What is that? You know? That's me. I don't like when people ask me how many weeks off we get before they start to work. That's just me. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's how I am. And I know I'm probably not going to change in that regard. I like it. I love what I do. I'm very fortunate. Right? Enthusiasm. Give yourself an enthusiasm check. One of the things which is disappointing to me at times is when I travel around and speak and someone will say, that was a good talk. I wish my son and my daughter heard. What about you? What about you? Say, hey, I've been doing this job for 30 years. I don't... Oh. Someone else, I've been doing this 23 years. Oh, I never understood that. See, I'm a dumb dago. I didn't realize that after a certain number of years in your profession, you put it on automatic pilot, and you automatically win. You automatically sell. Why? Because by the force of your presence. Right? So I said, wow, that's not a great thing to know. Next year when I coach, I go up to the other coach and say, how long have you been coaching? I say, 8 years. Ha! Huh. He's done. I'll kill him. I've been coaching 21. You got no shot. Don't work that way. You must maintain each year the same enthusiasm. My second part of motivation is dream. If you still dream. I still dream. I dream all the time. I dream. I watch that film a lot. I also, for my players, we have one practice every year where they come up on a court. There's no balls. There's no drills. All we do is practice cutting the net down. It's true. Well, I have a scissor. I have a gold scissor. We carry each other up. We cut the net. They put me up. I cut the last one. We do that. We film it. We go up in the locker room. We watch it. Then we watch us in 83 doing it. We see the reality. We see the dream. The dream can become the reality. How? By being enthusiastic. By feeling that you can accomplish that. Extraordinary events from ordinary people. And also by the work ethic that I don't have to tell you about. You know it. It just took me a long time to understand the relationship between work and success was not direct. If you work hard, you'll be successful. The relationship was, if you don't work hard, you can't be successful. That's a big difference. It took me a while to understand that. That you work hard because that's the nature, that's part of being successful. But if you don't work hard, you're... Every day. I want to be enthusiastic, keep my dream alive and work, even though I'm going to fail. And the last thing is what the rabbi was talking about. And when I was in the room listening, I almost cried. He talked about his father. I want to talk about my father, and then I'll go out of here. Rocco Valvano. I have no problems telling you, and maybe it's my family. He talked about family. It means so much. I have no problem. I can look at anybody and tell you, I love my mother. I love my father. I had no problem saying it to them. I had no problem saying it. Never had a problem. I understand the statement that sometimes the people you think you know the least, if that wasn't the case with me. My father was the single most important, influential person in my life. He never made a lot of money, and I think he's the richest man I ever knew. He never had a position of real importance, and yet he influenced more people than anyone else that I know. My father, Rocco Valvano. Let me tell you, so I know I'm running late. Let me tell you, you have to share. So when I got this job, my first job, I said to my pop, I said, boy, he's great, Dad. And he said, what do you want to do? I said, we're going to win national championship. And he said, I'll be there. I said, it's hard to do that. He said, no, I'll be there. Right now, it took me 8 years of work before I even made the tournament that was my dream to win. 8 years. First year I made him, coaching at Iona. I call up home, my dad, mom in New York, I said, we made it, we got a bid. So we celebrated the way Italians celebrate, we eat. You know, it was on a Sunday, we eat. All right, we start at 2 o'clock, you finish midnight, halftime about 6 o'clock. You know? My father calls me upstairs in his bedroom, which has never been in my father's bedroom, you know. And he calls you up and he says, there's a suitcase. Now remember I told you where my family's from, my father's never left New York. My father thinks everything north of the George Washington Bridge is Canada, right? You understand that? You know what I'm saying? Right? My father, we live in a neighborhood with the Familiaros, the Pizzamentis, the Kefis, the Capolas. I brought him. My wife is the first fair-skinned person that I ever met. That's the truth. Brought her home, my father said, we're not sure what it is, but let's keep it. You know, he said, you know? So, you see what I'm talking about? This man, this old guy. Oh, he's got the suitcase. What's that for? He said, I'm going to be there when you win the national champ. My bags are packed. I said, Pop, it's hard work. You'll do it. We lost in the first round. The next year, same thing. We lost in the second round. He said, you're Gainer. I moved to North Carolina. We made the tournament. I called him. It became a phrase, a catchphrase. My father said, my bags are packed for you. My suitcase is packed for you. And we lost, and we kept losing. Well, the year we won, 1983, I got a great picture of my father and I on center court in Albuquerque, New Mexico, hugging, and my brother gave it to me, and it said, like father, like son. It's the most important gift that I have from my brother. That picture, I know I'm not half the man my father is, but just that he knew what a compliment that would be to me. That night we celebrated. My dad said, what are you going to do now? I said, we're going to do it again. He said, I'll be there. I said, I know you will. The next year we made the tournament, called my bags are packed, we lost. Next year we made it, we lost. We lost in regional finals. And after the game I called up, we lost to St. John's in Denver, Colorado. I called my pop, he said, what a great game, I saw it. Oh, you were one, next year you'll make it. Then I flew home that night. He was one of those people who after I spoke to him, I always felt better than before. One of those, maybe you know somebody like that. After you talk to them, you feel better than you did before you went in, right? Maybe you know somebody. Well now, I get home that night. 2 years ago, and this is what made me think about it. I got home, my house in North Carolina, a lot of people there, and I came, what's the matter? Called me in. 2 years ago, April, my father had a heart attack and he died. And I lost my best friend in the whole world. This is not a sad story, it's a happy story. But I was knocked for a loop. Those of you who've lost a loved one, you know what that's like. This was my first time in my life. And I didn't know how to handle it, and I was missing. I couldn't understand what it was I was missing. A lot of people lose, you know, the people they love and maybe handle a little bit better. What was it? I didn't see him all the time, and I was traveling a lot, right? And then it hit me, what it was he gave me. I call it that. The gift my father gave me. And I think it's the strongest, the most powerful gift I've ever received. And it's a gift I find we don't like to give to each other, both in our business and our personal life. I spent 2 years trying to give this gift to other people. The gift my father gave me every day of my life was he believed in me. My father believed in me. He believed in me when I failed. He believed in me when I wasn't as fine a son, friend, husband, father as I could be. And I've done all that. But he's the one person who, when I didn't measure up to my standard or someone else's standard, he'd look me in the eye and he'd say, you're going to make it. I know you are. My bags are packed. You're going to make it. And I, it's the greatest thing. And I said to myself, how many people do I give that to? My own players. And how often when they make mistakes, am I critical? But never, ever look them in the eye and say, son, you'll make it. I know you will. I know you can. I believe in it. Right? How many people who I work with do that? How many people who I work for do that? Oh, it's an incredible gift. And I've worked 2 years now to add it to my personal philosophy. I like to remember where I started. I know where I am. And I know where I'm going, and I know I'm going to get there. I'm going to be excited and enthusiastic every day that God gives me on this earth. I am going to dream my dreams. I'm going to work, not harder than anybody else, as hard as everyone, and accept the failures, right? And I'm going to laugh a little bit and believe in the people I work with, the people who work for me, and the people I work for. And there's nothing going to stop me from cutting down the nets in my second national championship. And when I do, I'm going to sprint out on the court. You'll know why that I'm sprinting out. You'll know that. And I'm going to look up and I'm going to say, Pop, this one's for you. And I know he's up there elbowing someone. I know it's not a referee. It's going to be somebody else, right? He's elbowing someone and saying, that's my son. I knew he was going to do it. My bags were always packed. I ask you to have your bags packed to share in the successes of others. To not only have your bags packed to share, but be able to believe in the people you work with. If you can fill each day, I think, with that kind of belief and enthusiasm and a dream and a work ethic, a little left, I can't imagine us all not having a chance of cutting the nets down 52 years in a row like my friend here. I said that at the beginning. This is a special audience. It's a special group. It's been very motivating and invigorating for me to be here. I know that you folks can accomplish anything you want. I know that because my father told me so. God bless you, and I hope you have the kind of year that you want to have. Thank you so much.
No way to follow, Jim. We're adjourned.